And we are live at the Standing Room Spartans podcast. I am Kevin. He is Scott. We are back, and it's been a little while. We were just saying the Rutgers game feels like it was weeks and weeks and weeks ago. It was just a couple days ago. But Scott, we'll get to why we're late and what the deal is in a second here. But just in general, it's Wednesday here. How we doing?
Doing good. I've been sick for like 2 weeks, and every day is a little better, and I still have a residual cough. I know I coughed a couple times on our last recording, felt bad about it. I apologize. It will probably sneak up on me again, but other than that, MSU basketball just came off a huge win last night against Kentucky. That team is already surprising me. You know, I didn't really know what to expect, but I didn't expect that. So, yeah, vibes are high.
You know what's good? I'm just going to completely bypass the Michigan State basketball thing and go back to the more important point. You know what? It's this time of the year, I think a lot of people can relate to this. There are few better feelings in the world than when you've been kind of sick for a while and just that lingering, like it's late fall and we're all just kind of sick, and you have that first day of just full clear breath through the nose, full just normal, that you don't have that pressure in your head built up. It just, you feel like loose and normal, and you wake up and your throat isn't sore at all, and it's just like, oh my god, I'm a full person again. That is a fantastic feeling.
Yeah, there's, for whatever reason, when I'm sick and like I have a sore throat and stuff, I don't like coffee. Like it tastes worse. It tastes like metallic and nasty. And when I get back to enjoying my coffee in the morning, I'm like, oh, thank God. Because if you start your day with like a bad cup of coffee, like how is it going to get better? How could it possibly be a good day if you start with a bad cup of coffee? So starting with a good cup of coffee is a good sign of the day to come.
Yeah. So basically, to just kind of set it out there, Scott and I we've been talking about this for a while, like kind of under the radar, and then we just kind of settled on it this week. So basically, look, if you know, we're both in sales. It's the end of the year. Like, it's busy, man. We got lives to live. This is, you know, of course not on the highest of on our priority list. I forgot how to talk there for a second. DraftKings pays us. They don't pay us that much that we can rearrange our whole lives for the podcast, unfortunately. Not yet, at least. But now, basically what we're going to do moving forward for the foreseeable future is once a week podcasts. So I think we bit off a little more than we can chew with the 3 days a week, and we are six time zones apart. And, you know, it's just difficult. It's a lot easier to justify scheduling out one podcast a week rather than three. You know, it's just, it is what it is. If we were living in a perfect world, we'd be able to do this every day. We'd have press passes to the game. If this was my full-time job, I'd be a happy camper, but it's not. So we're going to keep it rolling. You know, nothing's changing other than the schedule. So we're going to hit once a week. It'll probably be a longer episode. So I'll try to, I don't want to make it a promise, but I'm going to actively try. I promise to actively try to do like timestamps, because basically how we're going to set it up through the rest of the season is we'll do the recap, the preview, and our picks all in one episode. And I'll try to give some timestamps in there to give you an idea of when to cut it off or when to start it up if you're just interested in the preview. We'll figure all of that out. But logistically, yeah, that's it. Once a week, and it'll probably be a little longer. And we'll just kind of see where that takes us and go from there. Scott, anything to add?
It's going to be fun. It's going to be great. We're going to pack it all in. I mean, life is busy for us, only getting busier, full of good things. You know, we don't have any, like, there's no like medical problems. There's no like catastrophes in our lives that are holding us back. It's just all good things that happen in your late 20s. And, yeah, we just want to make everything fit. We don't want to, we don't want this thing to burn us out so we can't do it anymore at all. We love our fans. We love the fact that our fans love us enough to reach out to us and ask about the podcast and talk about how they love tuning in and listening every week and, you know, shooting the breeze with us, as one of them put it. Yeah, we love that you've come to rely on us in a sense. We just started this thing because Kevin and I and a couple friends were talking about MSU nonstop as it was, and we said, hey, let's get some microphones and let's chat about this for the people. And it's grown into something that neither of us expected it to be, but we got to make it fit with everything else. So hopefully you understand, hopefully you'll still find it worth listening to. And yeah, like Kevin said, we're not going anywhere.
And hopefully DraftKings eventually pays us enough money that we can just build the studio out somewhere in East Lansing and
the middle of the Atlantic, our own, so we can both commute to it,
have our own bunker, and we'll do this full time. But until that day, we got to make arrangements. But yeah, so you know, we'll move on from that. But that was just a note that we have got a couple messages. It's been surprising every time, but we have gotten a few messages like, hey, still waiting on that Monday pod. Like, what's going on, guys? Everything all right? Everything's all right. You know, we're just busy. So yeah, the Rutgers game. We won't honestly probably spend too much time on it because it feels like it was a long time ago. And, you know, we're going to preview the Indiana game. But I mean, to me, the takeaway is, and it was just kind of refreshing myself today with the highlights and everything of it, is it was just kind of a not super interesting game. The biggest takeaway for me, so I'll give you my two biggest takeaways, my biggest positive takeaway and my biggest negative takeaway from the game, and then we'll kind of branch it out from there. Negative, you know, we start with the bad news first. Negative, the run defense was so bad, dude. I was saying that Kyle Manungai looked like college Reggie Bush mixed with college Adrian Peterson against this defense. He was dropping dudes on their backs. He was making people miss. He was outrunning people in the open field. He looked like the best running back in the country. And I know, given his stats, that he is not the best running back in the country. So there was something we were doing on the defensive side that wasn't working, mostly just tackling. But it was one of those examples of the lack of depth on the defensive line. It worked for a week against Illinois. We kind of patched it together, figured it out. And then, you know, the second week, without all of that depth on the defensive line, it came to bite us in the ass this time. So that was just a pretty glaring thing coming out of the game. He's got big holes to work with because the defensive line isn't filling gaps. And then he's just breaking tackles, which is, you know, a whole team problem. But that was rough.
Yeah, the defensive line, especially in the second half, just looked worked. And as that game progressed, we had some guys get dinged up on that line, too, that just made us even thinner. And, yeah, but as that game wore on, hands on hips, dudes breathing heavy, mouth wide open. You could just tell by the body language and everything else that we just don't have the depth right now to give those reps. And a lot of the guys obviously aren't playing their natural positions. So it starts there. But the back end tackling outside of Cal Halliday's 200 or whatever he had was shoddy at best.
You guys putting up numbers, man.
And frustrating. And honestly, when you look at the rushing stats, it's surprising that we did as well as we did. You know, we took a lead late in the first half and extended that to two possessions early in the second half and didn't relinquish it the rest of the way. But it gives you reason to pause. You know, there's a part of me that wants to think we turned a corner and we're going to be a competitive team against good teams now. Granted, depending on bowl eligibility, we may only have one game against a good team left, but it is still the team that started the season, and they certainly have improved since then, but it is still a team with plenty of holes and things that can be exploited. Now, thankfully, we were playing Rutgers, and yeah, we did some things well, but man, it was scary at times.
I just realized that as you were talking, so Cal Halliday, obviously the 20 tackle game, coming off of being the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week against Illinois with his insanely good performance. So through 2 years, he's still got 2 weeks left, I guess, for this season, but through 23 career games, Scott, almost two full seasons, what would you guess Cal Halliday is stands right now as far as tackles, just total tackles?
23 games. I got to think he's averaging double digits. So I'll put him at 250.
Not quite. 195.
I always do this. My wife always gets on me because whenever she asks me to guess a number, if it's like a big number, I always go over, and she's like, it's just
then it
not,
seems
it's
way
not fun
less
anymore.
Impressive.
Yeah, like, well, no, but 195.
Like, well, yeah, Cal Halliday only has 195 tackles through not even his first two seasons as a college football player.
Now
but
you know,
the
don't
point
ask
of that,
me that kind of question.
The point of this was the fact that I just realized, let me take a quick peek back. I knew that Dan Bass is the all-time leader at Michigan State for tackles. He has 541 career tackles. So let's assume Cal Halliday racks up another 20 this year. Let's even be kind of conservative. If we think we're going to get to a bowl game, he'll probably end up with closer to, let's say, 25, but that puts him right around 150 through two seasons. 200. Where am I looking at? 220 through two seasons. Puts him at a pretty good pace here. If he can pick it up as a junior and senior, you become a better player. You read offenses a little bit better and quicker and get to that ball, a half a step faster and turn an assisted sack into a solo sack. Those kind of start adding up for you throughout the year. He could be right up there with the Greg Jones, Percy Snow, Dan Bass.
Dan Bass have? What's the number?
541. And he's right. Like way clear. Percy Snow is at 473.
So 541.
Like he is way ahead at number one.
Halliday's at 195, so he needs 346 left. Theoretically, if we make just a bowl the next 3 years and no like playoffs or anything, he would have 29 games left if we make a bowl this year. So he would have to average 12 tackles over 29 games,
which
lofty.
Is a lot.
Lofty,
which is a lot. But here's the thing: you start thinking about today's game. And teams are running more plays, right? And back in Dan Bass's days in the 70s, teams were probably running like 60 plays a game, and he got 20 tackles, which is unbelievable.
There were 60 plays and 50 of them were inside runs.
Just as a ratio thing of like, yeah, the other team ran 60 plays and this one guy got a tackle on a third of them, but teams are running 100 plays a game now. There are like multiple teams around the country running 100 plays a game. So the opportunity is there more often. That just kind of popped up where not many guys have an opportunity as a true or as a redshirt freshman, but as a freshman eligibility wise to rack up 96 tackles, so he's started himself off at a pretty good note. We'll see. That's something to track over the next couple of years. But anyways, back to the game. Positively, I think it really came down to more on the offensive side of the ball, and it was mostly in that you look at the end of the second quarter, start of the third quarter, that middle eight that coaches always talk about. It's really important to go into the half playing well and come out of the half playing well. And going into the half, Michigan State puts together a 10-play, 73-yard touchdown drive, coming out of the half. You put together a 5-play, 86-yard touchdown drive. And even the drives right before and after were productive. You got, you know, more than 25 yards. It wasn't a three and out. And it was a pretty impressive performance. I mean, the whole first half really for the offense, they were moving the ball down the field. They didn't score every opportunity we got, but at least really throughout the whole game, a salty Rutgers defense, Michigan State was kind of carving them up and getting whatever we wanted yards wise. Ended up with 450. That was encouraging.
I remember, it feels like I'm recalling an old memory now. It's been 4 days, but the first two drives as well, we shot ourselves in the foot. You know, this wasn't Rutgers shut us down. This was us making mistakes. Yep. It's highlighted by the, and this will be a segment a little bit later, but I feel like we're more negative when we lose or when we win. I don't know. But the
that's how you know we're real fans is basically
the fourth and one on the second drive that ended the drive needs to be discussed, because one, Peyton Thorne had three options to convert that. He could have used his legs, he could have dumped it off to Malik Carr, or he could have made a good pass to Tyler Hunt. He chose the long throw to Tyler Hunt, throwing, you know, right-handed, rolling out to the left. That comes down to play call. To me, you're asking a lot from a quarterback to deliver an accurate throw.
Are you, though?
He should have made it. I know. I
saw that argument before, too, and I just, when you're at this level, that's not an issue of, like, the offensive coordinator shouldn't have, like, if you can't roll out to the left and throw a 6-yard drag route to the tight end, like, you're not a Power 5 starting quarterback, so...
Yes, he should have made it, but it's not putting the player in the best position to succeed. It is still, I mean, it's still one of the hardest, not the depth of the throw, but one of the hardest body positions to make an accurate throw. Like, if you ask a quarterback, what is the hardest throw? What is the hardest stance to throw from? You're rolling out to your opposite side and opening up your body.
Yeah, and especially, you know, those short throws, sometimes they seem super easy. But again, in that context where you're running, you're coming across the body and you have to put it right on the numbers, it can be, it's almost easier rolling left to just launch one, you know, because right. Then you can kind of really fully cork your body out there and really let it go. You know, the easier ones might not be as easy. But again, I don't think the play calling thing is something to really think about, because that's a play I'm sure that Peyton Thorne hits 99 times out of 100 in practice. It's an easy throw that he just missed by a mile. That was so bad. He could have walked to a first down.
Yeah. If Malik Carr was standing there still, Malik Carr was a stationary target about 5 yards away instead of Tyler Hunt, that was, as the crow flies, about 20 yards away. Nonetheless, that was frustrating, but Rutgers, I mean, in that drive, speaking of Rutgers not stopping the offense, the plays were first and 10, first and 10, first and 10, second and 7, first and 10, first and 10, first and 10, second and 10, third and 3, fourth and 1. So until that sequence of four plays, I mean, we were walking down the field on Rutgers, which is really encouraging for what we saw from this offense earlier in the year. And a little bit of what we've seen from Rutgers throughout this year. I mean, that first half was really pretty dominant by Michigan State. You look at Rutgers' first few drives, three straight punts before they scored their touchdown. And then they had that bizarre sequence at the end of the first half where they, like, drained the clock. And then with 20 seconds left, they're like, all right, pedal to the metal. We're going to go for it now. And then...
That was one of those where Greg Schiano always gets, I feel like, way too much credit for doing very little things right. You know, like, he'll be one of those games where, like, they lose by 28, but it was a game for 2.5 quarters. And people will praise Greg Schiano for the whole week about how he took this scrappy Rutgers team and, you know, he game managed his way to being in it late. And I just don't get it with Greg Schiano. I've never really gotten the hype. It's just, that was one of the most, like you said, the most bizarre things I have ever seen. Let's just melt the clock. Let's not even bother going to score against a Michigan State defense that it's like, hey, if you're going to give your guys a shot against anybody, it's probably going to be us. Let's be real here.
Especially if you're in hurry up and we're in prevent. I mean, we'll just open the floodgates. We're like, take what you want. Just don't cross the goal line.
Like, that is perfect. Let me get my young quarterback some confidence. Let's put a drive together where he could just make these quick little hitches and slants. And they had like 3 minutes. It was like unbelievable. I've never seen anything like that. And he's just, let's milk the clock. Let's run it. And then it was like, oh, shoot. Wait, we got all the way to here? Okay, yeah, let's go for it. Time out. guy clearly had no idea what he was doing.
Bizarre. Yeah, I mean, speaking of getting praised for like bad performances, like everyone, coming out of that Michigan game, Michigan Rutgers a couple weeks ago, 52-17. And people are like, wow, Rutgers really put up a fight. Yeah. I'm like, I don't care if you went into the fourth quarter up by 14. If you lose by 35, you did not put up a fight.
And the one Rutgers touchdown was a blocked punt. It's not like, hey, they had that one drive early where they marched their way down the field. It was just, I never understand the Greg Schiano hype. That just.
Something about him also just grinds my gears. I mean,
it's his face. It's very punchable.
Yeah. Maybe it's Rutgers' attitude towards the Big Ten, like having never done anything, and every other year they're like, we're back. I'm like, back to what?
We can make a bowl game.
Princeton,
look out.
In 1886 or whatever it was. So
look at me on my high horse laughing about teams struggling to make bowl games.
Yeah. Hey, we're 5-5. We're a 500 team. Speaking of running the ball, I know Rutgers had some success, but how about Broussard finally having himself like a legitimately good game and being probably our most productive? I mean, Berger and Broussard, the killer bees, they finally maybe looked up to
back.
Their nickname. 16-85-1 for Berger, 11-80 for Broussard. It felt like we were finding holes. Mel Tucker said early in the season, I'm not sure how true it was back then. I didn't really believe it, but he said like, there's holes there, and our running backs just have to find them. And this game, it finally actually felt like that was true. And they were even making a guy miss here and there. Control the ground and you control the game. I know we got outrushed, but almost 200 yards on the ground. If you take out sacks, we would have had over 200 yards, or I think that was Neal's minus 4 yards of kneeling. So 200 yard game on the ground. Not sure we've done that yet this year. And it really set the tone and took the pressure off Peyton Thorne, who, although his stats weren't terrible, I think still I would classify it as him struggling in this game. A lot of throws that were just head scratchers from Thorne, but having an effective ground game really lightened the load on him.
I feel, I don't know about you, this is one of the kind of longer term takeaways. You start looking at the end of this year and, of course, the quest for a bowl game, but we're to the point of the season now where you start looking ahead and you start thinking, all right, who can we start getting some reps for next year and stuff like that. The Jalen Berger thing, I'm starting to feel really good about. I feel like he's kind of finding his legs and finding his running style and finding his confidence. NBA Jam rules, he's heating up. He's got back-to-back good games now. You know what's funny, as I have the game log pulled up, his last two games almost couldn't be more identical. So against Illinois, 15 attempts, 81 yards. That's a 5.4-yard average. The longest run he had was 24 yards. Against Rutgers, 16 carries, so one more carry, 85 yards, four more yards, 5.3-yard average, one touchdown, longest run was 22 yards, 2 yards shorter than the last game. So it's basically like identical stat lines with the last two games. And he has just looked like he finally, again, you go back to the Mel Tucker comment where, hey, maybe those holes were always there and Jalen Berger just wasn't really, he was struggling to fit in and find his rhythm and everything. And now he's just gotten a bit more of a rhythm with the offensive line and where these holes are going to be on these certain plays and, knowing who he can trust to run behind and where the double teams are and who's getting up to the second. Like, maybe it's just kind of a matter of, hey, he didn't really have the whole off season to, cause he got here in the summer, right? He wasn't here in the spring. Or no, he was here in the spring. Broussard was here in the fall.
Correct. Yep.
Right. Okay. But yeah, hey, maybe sometimes it just takes time, and maybe now Jalen Berger is going to be our feature back for the next two seasons, right? And based on his play the last couple of weeks, I feel pretty good about it.
So speaking of, let's just shift to the passing game. There's a couple of conversations. Let's call out a couple of receivers because there was a couple flashes. So Jaden Reed certainly seems to be getting back to form with Peyton Thorne. A touchdown, another great grab down the sideline. Only four grabs, but 90 yards and a touchdown. And really, when it comes to the passing game, flashed more than anyone. But Daniel Barker finally coming into his own. Four catches, 64 yards and a touchdown. His first touchdown since week one against Western Michigan. His first game with more than two catches since Washington when he had seven, and his second highest yardage total of the year, and had a knack for big catches in this one. You know, it felt like every time we needed something, the ball found its way to Daniel Barker, and made a big impact here. But speaking of, because you opened this can of worms, so if anyone doesn't want to hear this conversation, blame Kevin. Speaking of the offseason and who's going to be around, we've been dabbling with this conversation outside of the podcast for a couple weeks. Quarterback. This season, and there may be a caveat here because, excuse me, it sounds like Peyton Thorne has been a little banged up this year.
Right.
And he hasn't had as much support around him. We know that. But it feels like we kind of know what Peyton Thorne is, and it's kind of pretty dependent on what's around him. And this year, I mean, outside of cupcake games, it doesn't really feel like he's had a great game. He's had a few good games, a couple good games, but he doesn't really feel like he's, I don't feel like he's had a great game this season.
No. And even the really good games, it felt like came with some caveats. You know, it was never, man, like wire to wire, he just, you know, he was dialed in, he was in rhythm. It was always, he had a really good game, but there were that couple series where, you know, we just couldn't get a first hour. He had a good game, but man, the second quarter, we just, you know, we didn't have the ball at all. There was always a caveat to the good games, it felt like.
Yeah, his three best games of the year: Western, four touchdowns, but only, you know, threw it 50%. And I remember being frustrated by the
inaccuracy. Had a bunch of those overthrows. Yeah.
Washington, he had three touchdowns and 71%, but most of it came when they had already taken a big lead and were kind of just playing not to let us get big plays to get back in it. Wisconsin, he had two touchdowns and threw 75%, but a lot of that came in overtime. And not to take much away from him, he's a great leader, he's a great competitor, and he has earned us some wins this year. But when you look at playing your best players, I'll only say this, because I don't think we for sure have a better option, but we do have blanking on his name. Come on, freshman right now.
Noah Kim.
No,
Caden Hauser.
Caden Hauser in the wings. Who knows how he'll progress in his first full offseason. There's rumors of a potential flip by a big talent. I'll leave it at that. We're not going to dive into that unless or until it happens.
That's now two podcasts where Dante Moore has come into the conversation. We are all in.
Dante Moore, what are the odds he starts for Michigan State week one? We're not going to get into that. That's off season.
Oh
chatter.
Man, if he's here, he's starting.
But nonetheless, like there may be other options, and I'll just say this: I don't think you can go into this off season saying Peyton Thorne's our guy. He might be, but I don't think you, like last off season, it was like this is Peyton's team. I don't think that's it for this off season.
No, I agree. I think in a vacuum. All right, like so. To be fair to the, you know, for people who are fully all in, all aboard the Peyton Thorne train, and you know, he's our guy, he's our leader. I get it, and I don't think there are very many people of those, because I think everybody loves the backup quarterback. You know how it is. Damian Terry was one of the fan favorites for years. It's just people love the backup quarterback, and I get it. But I think if you told anybody, hey, here in a vacuum, your team is 5-5, you've really underperformed for most of this season, and the quarterback of that team, it's his second year starting. At this point of the year, he's throwing for 2,100 yards, 16 touchdowns to 9 interceptions, 63% passer. And he has two like real legitimate NFL wide receivers. The offensive line isn't good, I know, but when we're being real here, there aren't very many like legitimately good offensive lines in college football. All right. Like there are probably 10 to 15 teams any given year who win games based on the strength of their offensive line. And it's kind of the same teams every year. It's Michigan, it's Oklahoma, it's Ohio State, Alabama. There aren't many teams who have a great offensive line. There's a lot of offensive lines that you would probably say are C plus B minus, right? That's probably accounts for like 50% of college football. And maybe we're closer to the C minus or C plus than the B minus. Maybe we're closer to a C than a C plus. But when you're trotting out two NFL wide receivers and you're at this point of the season with that stat line, again, obviously context is more important, but just in a vacuum, I'm saying for any college football program, you would expect better. And you would think like, yeah, if that's what we're getting out of that, yeah, sure. Next year, whoever is the backup is definitely going to get a chance in that offseason. I mean, I definitely don't think that we're going into the offseason this year and saying Peyton Thorne is the guy. He's taken all the reps through spring. He's taken, you know, it's just, I think there's, even within that building, there's going to be some form of a competition. There has to be.
Yeah, I think there does have to be. And obviously that'll depend on what they're seeing from the other quarterbacks behind the scenes, which is something that no outsiders, not even reporters, are going to be able to see, let alone podcasters like us. So we'll plant that seed. We'll put a pin in it. We'll return to it. Obviously, we've got a couple games to watch here, see how he performs, see how other things evolve, if you know what I mean. I'm being like so not sly about just talking about Dante Moore. I just, for whatever reason, don't want to say the name because I don't want to speak it into existence and then be upset when it never happens. But we won a game. Okay, let's bring it back now. We always like to start with the negatives, but we are now 5-5. And I mentioned after the Illinois game that it felt like the team turned a page, right? All of a sudden, this huge uphill battle to getting just to get a bowl game, which feels like in the world of MSU football is the bare minimum for any kind of a mediocre to successful season. You got to at least make a bowl game, right? It felt like an outside looking in situation after Michigan, pull out the win against Illinois. We asked for a comfortable win. I know this was a 6-point game, but as far as one possession games go, it was pretty comfortable. Like I was frustrated at times, but I never felt like we weren't going to win. Were times where definitely. I was like, what's this going to feel like in the second half? You know, the first half, we had those two drives that felt good and we didn't get anything out of them. And it was like, why is this game 7-7? But then after that first touchdown in the third quarter, it's like, okay, we're in the driver's seat. Rutgers doesn't have the firepower to really put the pedal down and drive themselves back into this game. So by and large, as far as this season's gone, comfortable win, sitting at 5-5. We're going to turn the page to Indiana in a second. But man, like 2 weeks ago, if you told me we'd feel like this, I would have been amazed. I'd be like, no way. Like, there's no way we're going to be in the driver's seat for bowl eligibility. And we talked about what kind of a coaching job it is by Mel Tucker last week. It continued this week. This team is full of holes. I mean, let's call a spade, but as far as keeping program momentum and keeping the program in a good light, to keep recruiting going, for whatever all that's worth, the season's starting to look like it's one that we can look back on and be like, yeah, it wasn't our worst, wasn't our best, but a great scrappy team that got milked something out of the season when it wasn't looking too good, and that feels good.
Yeah, we just landed another 4-star recruit that kind of came out of nowhere. Like, we're able to just keep the momentum stable, right? It's not going up, it's not going down, it's just stable. And I think that was the most important thing of the last couple of weeks. Yeah, you mentioned it was a comfortable win. I, along with I think a lot of people, had Michigan State -9.5, 4th and 29 or whatever that was, that Rutgers just launches one into the end zone for the backdoor cover of all backdoor covers. That was so frustrating. But to your point, I, as somebody who bet -9.5 early before the game, it's like midway through the game and they were still floating out Michigan State -7.5. I doubled down. I threw a little live action in there. I said, we're dominating this game. There's going to be a point where, you know, we get a couple more stops instead of these long Rutgers chunk runs, and we're going to punch a couple more into the end zone and we're going to run away with this thing. I just felt really good about it. Unfortunately, Rutgers bust down the back door, and hey, it's called gambling. It happens sometimes, but it does make the game a little more fun when you know you're not just playing for the Michigan State win. You need another score. You need another field goal so we can cover. It just kind of adds that little element of exciting play. And with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, right now, new customers can make any $5 NFL bet and get $200 in free bets if your team wins. And in addition to the usual bets, everyone can boost their winnings with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. You can look at, you can do Maction. You can do Thursday Night Football. You can do everything. Make things even sweeter. You can throw down on stepped up same game parlays once per game day all season long. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code TPPN for the Pigskin Podcast Network, of which we're a proud member, to get $200 in free bets if your team wins. Just place a $5 bet on any football game only at DraftKings Sportsbook using code TPPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. So we're turning the page here. We're going to talk about Indiana, and to do that, my first thought is, well, Indiana sucks. And then I'm like, all right, no, let's go prove it. All right, if you're going to say Indiana sucks, you got to prove it. And just off of, you know, first gut reaction, you've seen little bits of Indiana throughout the year. You've kind of been checking in on them as a Big Ten team. You know they're on the schedule later in the year. Scott, when I say the Indiana Hoosiers, you think of good offense or good defense first?
Neither, really.
Right. But if you have to pick one.
I guess defense, because they're kind of scrappy, and I feel like scrappiness like alludes to defense, but like, I don't know, not feeling strong about it.
Doesn't matter. They suck at both. So offensively, because I think more of the offense, and maybe that's just a carryover of Michael Penix, but they are 3rd to last in the country in offense yards per play, 4 yards per play, lower than Iowa, lower than Rutgers, lower than Colorado, like lower than these just horrible, horrible football teams. Indiana yards per play on offense is damn near the worst in the country, which I didn't really fully expect. I knew that it wasn't good, but I thought it would be a little bit better than that, I guess. Defensively, in terms of yards per play, I lost them here, but they were right around 100th in the country, 89th. There we go. So it's just not been a good season for Indiana. I'm starting to worry about my guy Tommy Allen and his job security. We talked about it this offseason. Remember we did the preview of the Big Ten, and I think I had Indiana for like 1 or 2 wins. They ended up with 3. But they had like 28 guys transfer out, And Michigan State's had kind of the same deal. Hey, it happens. Transfer portal era. They only brought in like three. It was just, there are some things going on in Bloomington that I don't think any of us are privy to from the outside, but whatever's going on inside, there are problems there. And I don't know what it is, but they are losers of seven straight now, basically ever since they won the first three in their non-con. Plus they beat Illinois somehow week one. And then they lost the last seven, which includes losses to Rutgers, to Maryland, to Nebraska. You know, they've had to play Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State, but they're not just losers of seven straight because of a tough schedule. It's not a good football team right now.
To make matters worse, they're struggling with finding a stable quarterback. Connor Bazilek had started most of the year, missed 2 weeks ago against Penn State with an injury, came back against Ohio State, and was benched for a guy who went 6-for-19. So, yeah, it's Dexter Williams went 6-for-19, did throw two touchdowns, but obviously not very efficiently.
I totally forgot about this in my preparation, so this is very related. Quarterback situation for Indiana. So do you remember, I'm talking to you, I guess, directly, but to the fan in general. Do you remember Jack Tuttle? He was relatively highly rated recruit. He was Michael Penix's backup, came in a couple times for some spot duty, played against Michigan State last year. When Connor Bazilek entered, he came into Indiana from Missouri. So Connor Bazilek comes in, presumably takes the starting job. Jack Tuttle enters the transfer portal. And, you know, we've had guys enter the transfer portal midseason all the time. Jack Tuttle last week, because of quarterback injuries, they had to play him. They were like, look, Jack, I know you've been in the portal for like 2 months. You don't want to be here. At this point, we've moved on. We don't really want you here either. But dude, we don't have anybody else. So you have a guy playing quarterback for your team who is currently in the transfer portal. It's amazing.
It's like when you put in your 2 weeks notice at a job and your boss asks you to do a project that's going to have like a major bearing on the future. And you're
and
like,
to like head up the project too.
Yeah, you know? Right. Like, and you're like, what are you, why? He didn't actually record any stats. I think he was just more of a handoff robot in that game. But yeah, I remember Jack Tuttle. This Indiana team, they did have 140 yards on the ground against Ohio State by like a litany of different players. They had six different players record a carry, although Bazilek, I think, was sacked. That's the only reason. So five guys,
many times,
all with between 17 and 46 yards. And well, one was 1-for-44 yards. Nonetheless, they use a stable back there. Just shy of 6 yards or 4 yards per carry against Ohio State. But obviously we know Ohio State stats are hard to trust. As a team, they're averaging on the ground 2.8 yards per carry this year. I'll let you decide if that's good or bad. I think most people would agree it's pretty bad. But before the Rutgers game, I said, I don't expect Rutgers to do anything on the ground to us, so we don't have to worry about that. And like
point.
You said, we played Reggie Bush the second. And yeah, so it depends on how we tackle. Kevin, what's the spookiest part of this Indiana offense to you?
Well, early in the season, so I guess you start looking at how did we get here. One of the biggest problems with Indiana is they actually early in the season had a bit of a passing attack developed, but they lost their number one receiver, Cam Camper. It's an amazing name. But I mean, he had nearly 600 yards through seven games this year, but I think he tore his ACL. I know he's out for the year, which, you know, that's a tough loss for them. You know, you have one thing that's really working for you, and you know it's not a great team, but you know you have this one guy you can count on. Who was that dude for Indiana in the COVID year? He had a last name. It started with F. He was an outside Freifogel, something Freifogel.
He was a tight end, wasn't he?
He was a big wide receiver. He was like 6'5", 6'6". But I mean, you at least have something that you can kind of latch onto, and it's always fun when it's a wide receiver, right? But Cam Camper came out of the year really hot, and then unfortunately is out for the year. So with him out, I mean, there just aren't too many weapons on this team. Sean Shivers is kind of a dual threat guy in terms of decent running back and can catch it out of the backfield. DJ Matthews is a good athlete, but I don't know, man. I've kind of caught glimpses of Indiana throughout the year. I'll be straight up blunt with you. I haven't watched a full Indiana game, but there isn't really anybody on offense who really puts any fear into you other than Cam Camper, who again is out for the year.
This feels like a game where we just have to play mistake-free defense, right? Like, we know what our defense is, and it's not going to look like Georgia. It's not going to be a dominant situation. But if we don't make big mistakes on defense, keep the ball in front of us, don't give up any explosive plays, we will absolutely give our offense a chance to win the game. It's not a game where it's going to get out of hand on the defensive side. That's all I'll say. I'm not going to say nothing's going to give us trouble, because depending on the game, the passing games have given us trouble. Rushing games have given us trouble. We still don't have like a cornerstone strength of the defense, I would say, especially with the damage to just the depth chart. But I'm confident enough in our defense against this offense that we at least match up.
And if we assume that the Rutgers offense and the Indiana,
did we lose you or did we lose me? Because you froze. I'm gonna keep talking because I don't know if you're talking.
Please squeeze out of there that game. You know, so if we're looking at two teams of with relatively equal offenses in Indiana and Rutgers, and you're looking at the same defense, the same guys out there, I can't imagine Indiana getting more than what Rutgers got. So if you're thinking like 21 is kind of the ceiling, and that's not a testament to, wow, this is such a good defense, you're not going to score more than 21 against them. But with the way they're playing relatively confident football right now, and Indiana being right on par with Rutgers offensively, I can't imagine Indiana scoring more than 21. And hey, if they do, then we're all of a sudden going to find ourselves in a ball game, but I just can't really see that.
Yeah, they've only scored 21 or more twice in conference play, more than 21 twice in conference play, against Illinois 23 and against Maryland with 33.
And again, Illinois was week one.
They haven't scored more than 21 since the Maryland game. They had a bye week in there, so I guess it's been 5 weeks before games. I tend to agree. I mean, anything can happen in a football game. We score fast, they get more possessions. Who knows if they break 21, but excuse me. I think we match up well enough to slow them down. The weather at this time of year could slow them down further. One reason, actually, that brings me back to a quick point about the Rutgers game. It was cold, and tackling motivated people when it's cold, anyone who's played a contact sport outside knows this, it sucks. And it looked a little bit like MSU's defense just didn't want that smoke a little bit on those heavier plays. I mean, they were getting run through a little bit, and it looked like those situations against the running back in the hole where you got to come downhill on a guy. I don't know. It's hard to get your mind behind slamming into somebody full speed in that temperature. So nonetheless, what I'm getting at is cold games usually don't score as much either. And it could be chilly again this weekend. It looks like you're looking up the weather. I hope you are, because I don't have it in front of me.
I'm not. I was actually looking up the over under. So we'll do our picks. Hey, we're doing once a week. We got to make our picks in there too. And at the end of the episode, but the current line with DraftKings, I got it up, Michigan State is favored by 10. The over-under is 47.5. So Vegas is not expecting a very high-scoring affair here. That's something like, what would that be, like 28-18?
Yeah.
29-19, I guess, would be more.
It's going to be 27 degrees and snowy on Saturday.
Oh yeah, there's that snowfall coming through this weekend.
It's supposed to snow for like 4 straight days from now until
Western Michigan is supposed to get pounded pretty good.
Colder and colder, and then it's going to be a quiet Spartan Stadium. I hate to say that, but let's be real with ourselves. That's not
Yeah, and it sucks so
to see a 5-5 and whatever Indiana is 3-7 football teams face off in the cold.
Well, and here is a perfect opportunity for our yearly reminder. Saturday is Senior Day, which it snuck up on me that this season is almost over. But Saturday is Senior Day. So, hey, again, it's the yearly reminder. If you're in the area, if you're thinking about going to the game, if you have season tickets and you're like, I don't know, it's going to be pretty cold. I don't know if you go to the game, if you end up making it to the game, please try to show up early. I'm with you. I don't think. Oh, we're back. Okay. We had some connection issues. Hopefully it's in a spot that I can easily edit this out.
I don't know if it's on your side or my side.
As you're listening, you won't know what happened and you're just going to be really confused.
I tried to, can you hear me? Are we on the same page
now? Yes, we're good.
All right,
we're
cool.
Good.
Sorry if there's some technical difficulties. We had another hiccup earlier in the show. You know how it is. Like we said, there's a whole ocean between us. So the fact that this is even happening is a miracle, a modern marvel. So we got 27 degrees. We've got a 10.5-point line. I don't think we've talked yet about Indiana's defense against our offense. What sticks out to you?
Let's just kind of lay it out there. It's a tryout for 2023 for a lot of these guys, especially along the offensive line where Chris Kapilovich has started rotating a lot of these young guys in there. We're seeing Vandermark, we're seeing Wigginton. I think a lot of this is we're talking 2023 tryouts. Who's going to go into the offseason with an edge at certain positions all the way across the offensive line? I think you could make that argument. All of the receivers behind Jaden Reed are fighting for, you know, whatever we presume that he leaves when he presumably leaves after this season. I guess technically he can come back, but I just don't think he's going to. Quarterback, we already talked about. Running back, you know, can Berger kind of secure his role as the guy down the tail end of this season going into next season? I think this is a good opportunity for all of those guys against a mediocre to poor defense to kind of showcase, make some plays, and make themselves stand out in the coaches' minds going into Thanksgiving-ish time of the season.
Yeah, I don't. Jaden Reed leaving is a conversation worth having in the offseason. He hasn't had the year he had last year for a few different reasons, but. He does still have plenty of tape on the books, but nonetheless, I mean, this is a game, last one in Spartan Stadium against the last easy-ish competition we could get, depending on if we make a bowl game and who the opponent is. Great opportunity to put something on tape, not only for scouts, but for your own coaches, like you said. It's going to be cold. 27 degrees. You remember, I mean, we both played football in Michigan, man. Like, I know I already belabored this point, but you remember hitting people in the cold God. Like that?
Especially if you are not if you're the, we had a couple guys on the team going both ways, you know, if you're one of those type of dudes, then hey, you're just, it's another day. Your body is warm. But the worst part about football is that your unit goes onto the field and then comes off and you have to stand there in one of these football games. If this is on, what network is this on? Is this on like FS1? If it's a Fox network, these guys are going to be standing there for 9 minutes, freezing their asses off until they get back on the field after the 4 TV timeouts that we've had.
Yeah. hands down the pants, trying to keep them from going numb. Like, I'm thinking back to, we didn't have like the nice warming coats or the heat guns or anything on the sidelines. You know, it was just like you in the snow. And if you're like me, you're not playing most downs. So like when you get in the game, you're psyched, but you're also like, I am an ice block right now. Yeah. And like, you're on kickoff and your coach is like, yeah, go slam into somebody. And you're like, coach, you go slam into somebody.
Yeah. Right. And I'm going to sound really, I don't want to say the word for it, for complaining about this as a kicker. Kicking balls in the cold sucks. That shit hurts. And I know that people who played like real positions in football are going to laugh at me for saying that. I know. Look, I've been a kicker my whole life. Nothing's changed. The jokes haven't changed. I just will tell you that kicking in the cold sucks. It hurts. It hurts your foot. It's not a good time.
It's pretty much like kicking a light rock regularly. So there's not too much to this. It feels a lot like the Rutgers game. It's at home again. Indiana, if there's a team worse in the Big Ten East than Rutgers, it is this team, especially with how their season has panned out. So we have a few things. We didn't do player of the game and game ball for Rutgers. I don't want to lose sight of that. And we got to do our picks. So yep. Are we ready to wrap this thing and go through those three?
Let's rip it off.
All right. So going back to the Rutgers game, I don't remember who went first. Let's start with our game ball. I think I went first. We'll go with it. I don't remember. So you go
first. If you have somebody in mind, let it rip.
I have a play of the game in mind, but I'm still working on my player. So you go with your game ball.
Okay, my game ball will go to, it's low hanging fruit again, but Cal Halliday had 19 tackles. That's ridiculous. And tackles can be an overrated stat. You know, hey, if you tackle the guy 8 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, was that really like a great achievement? No, and a lot of the times that's what it ended up being for Halliday with the day that Kyle Manungai had for Rutgers. But mixed in with that, there were a lot of plays right around the line of scrimmage. A tackle for an 8-yard gain is better than somebody else in the secondary tackling him for a 28-yard gain, right? So Cal Halliday, 19 tackles. We've talked about him already today. You love the way he plays. And do you wish that he could be better in pass coverage? Of course. You know, do you wish he could be a little bit better moving, you know, side to side and in kind of tight spaces? Yes, of course I do. But for the role that he plays in the system that we currently have, this guy just eats, man. It's fun to watch sometimes.
Yeah, that was the low-hanging fruit. Honestly, the only one I could think of that pops off the box score. I'm going to go with the unit. Not the whole unit, but from a unit that we don't give a whole lot of love to on the pod because we're not football experts who grind film all week. And the offensive line is a hard position to isolate success. When they're doing well, it doesn't jump. And when they're doing poorly, it does jump.
Especially on the TV broadcast.
Spencer Brown has quietly started 2 straight games at left tackle for Michigan State. This game, he allowed 0 pressures. That is outstanding for a unit that's going to need to take huge steps again this offseason. And presumably Jarrett Horst, I don't think he has eligibility left.
No. I was going to say him, Brian Green, JD Duplain, Nick Samek. We're going to have some turnover again.
So speaking of tryouts at the end of the season, Spencer Brown looking like the left tackle of the future as it stands right now. And had a great game on offense. So I'm going to go with Spencer Brown. Hopefully it's a sign of things to come. Hopefully he continues to do that. The other side as well, he played right tackle. Left tackle was Brandon Baldwin, who also deserves shout out, and I think was the one I had in mind. But all in all, the offensive line had a good game, opened up holes in the running game, generally kept Peyton Thorne off the ground. Baldwin has started 2 straight. Spencer Brown has started every game this season. Yeah, so that's what we're going to roll with. I'll kick off our play of the game. I'm going with, speaking of units that don't get a lot of love, this one's more because they haven't done much this year, but Ben Patton's 48-yard field goal.
Hey.
It wasn't the difference in the game, but it did change the vibes at the end of the game. We were up by 10 at that point. He pushed it to 13, and I don't think there was a soul in that stadium that thought he was going to make that kick. And it was cold. Speaking of cold kicks, it was like 35 degrees in that stadium, and he boomed that thing. Obviously, consistency is just as important as anything when it comes to kicking, but that was the best game of kicking we've seen this year. 2-for-2 on field goals, 3-for-3 on extra points, highlighted by that long 48-yarder in the cold. So finally, a kicker we can highlight for something positive this season, and hopefully he keeps it up.
I love it. I thought about him for that as well. We're going to stay in the kicking game. I'll go with the block field goal. Block field goal is always fun, something that doesn't happen too often, and in a pretty key moment at the time, right? We're still pretty early on in the fourth quarter. We are leading a one-score game. They punch it. If they would have punched in that field goal, and then all of a sudden you're in a position where a touchdown wins it for Rutgers, and you start getting real nervous. Jacob Slade gets his paw up there and blocks the kick. So just doesn't really happen too often. It's always fun to see the special teams units, really going out there and making a play. As a lifelong special teams guy, I always appreciate that.
Nice.
So I think that's...
Now fast forward to...
Picks. Make the pick and get out of here. Yeah. So we had it DraftKings State minus 10 or 10 and a half?
I saw 10 and a half. It's 10 right now. Live line 10. Is 10.
So I think this is one of those, I'll kick us off. I think this is one of those games where you have a lot of teams, and I kind of look at this when I'm looking at the board every weekend. I look at motivation, because this is...
You waiting on me?
I don't know exactly
if you
when
went through all that. I missed it. I don't know if it's my internet or yours. If you've made it this long through our internet troubles, thank you for being such a loyal fan. All right. We're totally on different timing at this point. I'm throwing my pick in there. Michigan State to cover 10. That's all I'm going to say, because I have no idea how this audio is going to link up at this point. Michigan State covers.
All right. So with all that said, there behind the scenes, we're testing out a new thing here recording wise. So if it works the way I'm hoping that it works, then this is going to be really interesting audio. If it doesn't work, it's also going to be interesting audio. So we'll see. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Go green, go white. Take care, folks.